Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Coffee and Open Source, a place to meet some new friends, have some great conversations, and maybe learn something along the way. I'm your host, Isaac Levin. And if you have any questions or if you want anybody to come on the show and chat with me, feel free to reach me on Twitter. My handle there is Isaac R. Levin, or you can reach out to me on Mastodon. My handle there is IsaacRLevin@fossendon.org. So with that out of the way, I'm looking forward to my guests. We were talking a little bit before. They are everywhere. And I'm looking forward to learning how they are able to be everywhere. So my guest today, Jeremy Sinclair. Jeremy, do you want to say hello? Introduce yourself.
Hey, hello, everyone. Jeremy Sinclair. I come from Wheeling, West Virginia. I'm about an hour from Pittsburgh, PA, just to put that location into, you know, let everyone know where I'm at. Microsoft MVP, Avalonia MVP, ARM Ambassador. All things Windows on ARM. That's, you hear me yelling about it on X, formerly known as Twitter. And yeah, I like developing. I like learning stuff.
Yeah. So you mentioned something before we got started, and I think it's very important to call it out. Like, you said you're from West Virginia, but like, you are the only MVP from West Virginia, which I think is kind of a cool little flex on your behalf. So like, kudos to that. I'd love to know a little bit more about you. Like, in one of the ways that I love learning about how people got started. Like, do you remember when technology first introduced itself to you and what that experience was like?
Yeah, I mean, I vaguely remember as like a child, my father, he used to work at steel mill. And so I remember him getting home late at night and even seeing like the 386 we had. I can say like the earliest memory I have of a computer was seeing Prodigy and DOS. So, you know, dial up and the Prodigy.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
So like that was it. And then I kind of got hooked on DOS video games, watching my dad do stuff on there. And then I got hip to DOS and breaking and fixing things, you know.
So one thing that I'm curious too, like, you know, since you got started pretty early, were you kind of fascinated with like the how things work part of tech? Like, I think one of the things that's very interesting about learning how people got started is like there's curiosity or this fascinating thing with, like, let's be real, like you're like convincing like sand to be like pretty intelligent. And like that whole premise to me was always fascinating growing up. Like, were you kind of like a tinkerer as well, or did you have other hobbies that weren't like, you know, super nerdy?
I was a tinkerer.
Yeah.
So I like video games a lot. So a lot of it was my main focus to really learn how I can play, you know, execute all these video games, all the shareware.
All right. So we're back. I jinxed myself by talking bad about Windows earlier, and then I got a blue screen. So where I stopped off was you were talking about, like, you know, it's getting set up, like playing Duke Nukem and things like that. So you want to maybe start from there? Yeah. I don't know how much you talked after that, because, again, lost access to everything.
Yeah, I spoke a good bit. I just noticed
you I froze.
Just weren't moving.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. Cool.
But yeah, like, so as I was saying to myself, Duke Nukem 1 and 2, Commander Keen, all the Apogee games, those were a lot of my inspiration for learning DOS, running out of memory, running like MemMaker, and especially troubleshooting the Sound Blaster, sound cards, and like the auto exec dot bat and config.sys, like all that nerdy stuff. I've been troubleshooting since day one, essentially, looking back.
Yeah. So you went really nerdy, which I really appreciate. I mean, so my like origin story, like I've always like been interested in computers. Like I played like the Mac, we played on like an Apple II when I was in elementary school. Like if you were good, you got sent to like the back of the room to play like Caterpillar or something like that, or whatever, like the worm, earthworm that would eat the letters. I can't remember the name of that game. Yeah, I should probably look it out. Yeah, I just play that one. Yeah. And then like after that, like it was just fascination with computers. Like I used to hang out with like the networking guy at school, which I imagine he didn't appreciate it at all, because it's probably very weird for him. Because I'd like ask him like, oh, what does that do? Like, what are you doing right now? And he's was like, I'm just trying to do my job. And then we got a computer when I was in high school, and I took it apart like day two. And like that was about the flex of everything. Wow. So here's a question for you, right? So you're tinkering with stuff, and you're very curious, like, and you realize that you like tech. When did you realize that you can make money in tech?
Yeah, so I realized that when I think let's say around the age of 13. So my father at the time, he had a friend who built websites and just kind of made like hosted domains and stuff like that. And he brought me on to help him out because I like getting into things. Then eventually I started learning more HTML and PHP.
Yeah.
That was like into high school. So it was just like, I just started learning a lot more to anything that was presented to me, like even beyond my prior JavaScript and classic ASP knowledge.
Yeah.
All driven by anime, FYI. So,
oh, so that's a whole nother thing too. So like, I had N1 Simmons on my show recently, and we were talking about like the geeky side of tech, and like, you know, how there is like a pretty large, like, you know, if you were to take like a Venn diagram of people that are like cool, like people that like tech and people that like love things like D&D or anime, or they're just into like video games, like at a really hardcore level, like there's a pretty large overlap. I'm curious to know, as somebody who is, you know, you would consider yourself nerdy, right? Like, what is it? Oh, yeah. What do you think it is? Is you think it's the access, or like, you know, you kind of understand how computers work, and so you want to like be more familiar with like techie sort of things? Like, what do you think it is about people that are super interested in like, I guess, nerd culture and people that are in tech?
I want to say it, the access side. So when I was growing up, the only way I even was introduced to, you know, knowing that anime was something in Japan was because of a few friends who were, well, actually one of my best friends who used to order things from Japan, like on those websites where you could, you know, get like all the, what is it, like the Power Rangers?
Sure, yeah,
like the Japanese versions of that. So I got into that, and then, you know, I was a huge, am still a huge like Sailor Moon fan. That was like something my sister and I would watch after school, and then I started researching all of that, and then found out, oh hey, this is something from Japan. I want to download the Japanese episodes. So
interesting.
In comes IRC.
That's
the gateway. So it's like IRC, getting into, you know, finding all the different channels, and then eventually like BitTorrent came into it. So that's a lot of that was just finding a way to access that.
Yeah. I think you and I are a similar age, right? Where I think that's the big thing. It's like you found out very quickly there's more of me out there. You know, like to quote, like, I don't know if you've seen the show Arrested Development, but like there's this whole meme. It's like there are dozens of us, or there are tens of us, right? And you find out that like you have a community of people that share similar interests, right? And let's be real, like most kids, you know, growing up in the 90s or the early 2000s, right, or even like the 80s, like there wasn't like a lot of acceptance for like people that didn't like, oh, you like, you need to like sports, you need to like rock music or rap music. Or in like, you need to like kind of fall into like these buckets of like pop culture type things. But if you skew outside of that, like you kind of feel isolated. So like the access online is like, oh, there's message boards and there's IRC, like you're talking about. Like you just have access to like a insane amount of people. And you find some of those people have shared interests as you. Like, do you remember like when you realized that, like, other than like the getting, you know, access to like cool things, like that there are people that you can communicate with as well. When did you realize that like there's a lot of people out there that might be similar to you?
I I think it was during the IRC days.
Yeah.
There was like a few channels that I would frequent in the, with, was it Merck or MRC? I don't know how it was actually pronounced, but they would have that, you know, that direct connection, like the DCC stuff, and they would have all of these like scripts to figure out that you could do all these macros. And so I started getting into writing a lot of scripts for my own enjoyment and scripts that would naturally go looking for other channels and automatically downloading things and trying to, you know, get around barriers that were put up for me. Naturally, that, you know, just kind of, this is inconveniencing me. I'm going to find a way to make this work until I am happy.
I graduated high school in 2004, and I remember like vividly, like when I moved to a place that had a fast internet connection, like, cause I had dial up growing up, and then I went to college and I'm in the dorm rooms and we have like T1 or whatever it is. And I just was like, the amount of access that like I had, like access to literally everything, whether it be just like the internet or like you said, torrenting, or like there was like private networking, like people were sharing like terabytes of content like on like the school like server, like the school like network. And I'm just like, there's just so much here. I love this, because I'm from a very small town, and like there was like four people that I knew growing up that liked computers. And when you go to a place and like everybody to an extent likes computers, it was pretty eye-opening. I would love
to. It was cool. Go ahead. Like I got the acceptance. So like, you know, in high school, I was the geeky nerd, but when it came to things like mixtapes and new things that came out, everyone knew, for lack of a better term, that I was the mixtape plug.
You were the guy who burned all the CDs, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. I always had the new stuff. Oh. I download all of the, like a Kazaa, Napster, all of that.
So I'd
have all of that.
So I remember, because this was back in the days, like when you had like Windows 98 was like basically like school computers had Windows 98. And like, let's be real, like Windows 98 wasn't like the most secure operating system. And like you could just hide programs in Windows 98. Like you could put Counter-Strike on like in some random folder in some random place. They just go over and click, double click, and it would work. And you know, it was amazing that. And then we realized, oh, we can do this with fast internet at school and like downloading music. So yeah, like I had a little bit of like a CD downloading racket running out of the school, which, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh man, I'm glad that like Lars Ulrich didn't find me and sue me, because I would have been messed up.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, one thing that you mentioned a bit earlier is like, you know, you started kind of playing around with like writing some code, right? Like, so, you know, one of the things that I find very interesting learning about when people first started like writing code for the first time is, you know, the expression that you're able to kind of relay, like even if you're building like something very trivial, right? Like that feeling of like having something that works is very impactful. So like, when did you kind of realize that like you had like this unlimited potential of like expression and creativity, like just by writing like some code? Like, when did you realize that was a thing?
Well, and this goes back to anime. So I was obsessed with Dragon Ball Z at this time. And, you know, they used to have all of these different sort of site ranking sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd frequent them to mainly to find episodes to download. But then I'd also go to a few sites and I noticed that they had all this dynamic material. And I would kind of try to decipher what was going on in the URL, what was changing, how they could search and, you know, filter all of these news items and things like that. And once I figured out the languages that they were using, I, you know, broke open the good old Microsoft front page.
Oh,
and,
chef's kiss.
Yeah, taking it back.
Chef's kiss, yeah.
But I got that open and I started learning, taking different tutorials, which was pretty rough at that time, because that was the time where you really had to buy books to yeah. find out how to really program. So it was a few, there's a few sites you could find things. But I started learning, I started figuring out how to make that dynamic content and started trying to do what I could to learn more. Mm. And I'm like, okay, I could build this thing for myself. It's mine.
Yeah.
Although I saw this, like, I can make my own version of this. And so I just kept at it and kept learning, kept reading as much as I could, kept deciphering everything that was in front of me.
Yeah, like that's, so here's a question to kind of go back. You were talking a bit about like, being able to edit things and modify things. And you said you were a gamer. Did you go into like the depths of like modding games? Did you ever get that far into like your thing?
That's one thing I surprisingly didn't do. I mean, I did have all, get the key loggers and stuff, like not the key loggers, the key generators.
Yeah.
For those, those games, and then the cracks, and then you prayed that it wasn't something malicious and blew up your computer. But I always thought that was interesting. But during that time, I was more along the, I want this to work.
Yeah.
But then I did go down the path of troubleshooting. So I'd always start to look for ways to find out, okay, why isn't this working?
Mm.
What do I need to change on my side? Where do I need to go to find out what's going on? And so like that troubleshooting just followed me.
Yeah.
So that's a core kind of tenet to everything I do.
Like you saying that is so interesting to me because I know you as, like we talked about this a little bit earlier, like you're the guy that's kind of like everywhere. Like, you'll be somewhere, it's like, oh, like you're at, like, I see Jeremy pop up. He's like, oh, added armor support for this thing. Or it's like, you just kind of like, you just show up and you do something that is awesome. And then you just kind of like disappear and then you come back. It's quite frankly, it's very fascinating. If you were to follow, like, maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll go like in your GitHub and I'll look and see like what projects you've contributed to over the last year and like try to find like some rhyme or reason to like what it is. Like, because it seems to me, and if this is inaccurate, please correct me, but like your whole thing is like around like just bringing value where you see there's a missing value. And that's something I'd love to kind of, like, you mentioned this a little bit, like, is this something that you just have had forever? Like, you see, like, oh, this is something that I would like. Like, I should just do it. And if it brings other people joy, awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way of putting it. And I'd say lately, if you did go and search through my GitHub, which is github.com/snickler, there's a funny funny story around
sure
username. My daughter, when she was young, she tried to figure out how to pronounce my last name, and she was like, on my name card, she was like, is that Snickler?
I
just burst out laughing, so I just made it my username. But over the past year, you'll see me contributing to things that have been inconveniences to my daily life of using my Windows and ARM device.
Interesting.
That's a lot of what I contribute to is because something isn't working where it should work. So I just go, all right, well, let's figure out why this is not working and let's make this work.
Keep going.
Yeah, I was going to say it's more, so like to say it's inconvenience as a service, because if everything worked, I think back on this, it's like if everything just magically worked, I probably wouldn't be as driven, because the more I, I see things and I'm like, ooh, I want this. This is cool. Yeah. Let me play around with this. And then something doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, let's go debugging. Let's go dig through the source. Let's look at, let's look at logs. How can we make this work? And that's essentially what I do eventually after, like, if I ignore it enough, it's going to irritate me. And I'm like, that's it. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, you mentioned something that I just want to call out. Like, if everything just worked, like, tech would be a much smaller industry than what it currently is, right? Like, let's just be clear about that. Like, the only reason why tech exists is because nothing ever works. And the time the things do work, people make money off of it. So I've had this particular, like, thread come up a few times as I've done this show for all through the years. It's like the idea of, like, building open source, right, or contributing open source. It starts out usually as, like, I have a problem that I'm trying to solve. And then you realize, like, maybe you talk to somebody, maybe you publish the code on GitHub, you realize that, like, oh, I'm not the only person with this particular problem. And then that's how you, like, you build this community around it. Like, and I've talked to maintainers of very large, you know, open source software. And, like, 99% of them have been like, oh, I needed to build something that did this thing. And then everybody just gravitated towards it. Like, when did you realize, you know, maybe you're probably farther along in your career, like, did you realize that, you know, being kind of like that person that wanted to solve problems for themselves and then recognizing that there were problems that a lot of people could benefit from, when did you realize that was so valuable as a part of the tech community?
Maybe this goes back to the Windows Phone days. Another story of inconvenience.
Sure.
I was, at that time, Google Music had just come out, and I was mowing my yard one time, and I was playing it through the Internet Explorer. I think it was just like Windows Phone 7 at that time.
Sure.
I was playing music through the browser, and then once my phone locked, the music stopped, and it kept happening, and it irritated me so bad that after I was done mowing the lawn, the first thing I did was went back to my computer, popped open Fiddler, and started scraping how the whole authentication and all the API for Google Music worked, and then made a Windows Phone app for it.
Man.
Just for that inconvenience, just so I could listen to music on my Windows Phone while I mowed the yard. That was the primary motivation for that.
What we needed to do is we needed to find a way to clone you like 10 years ago. And like every single, like, you know, obviously I think the number one reason why Windows Phone didn't work out is because there wasn't enough Jeremys out there to like build apps to like bring all this value, right? Like, so we should have like, you know, maybe in 40 years when we invent time travel, let's go back and figure out a way to get more Jeremy's contributing to Windows Phone development. Cause that, I mean, I think it's still the best phone. Like, let's be real. Like, it's still like the best phone.
Yeah. I have to agree with that.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's funny, like you talk about, like, you recognize like, oh, like I'm very irritated at this experience. And what's the first thing you do? You try to throw tech at the problem to solve it. Right. You probably could have like found some way to like buy something. Right. Like maybe there was a paid version of Google Music or whatever it was, right? I don't even know if that was a case back then. But like you didn't have to like throw tech at the problem immediately, but you did. You started to open up Fiddler and looking at traffic, which is absolutely hilarious to me because I do similar stuff. Like I'll go to a GitHub repo, and the first thing that I do is I just hit dot the second I go to a repo and open up it in GitHub dev so I can look at all the source code easier. You were starting in tech and then you were part of like this open source revolution, right? Like getting started in tech, like GitHub comes out and, you know, and like before that it was CodePlex. Like, but when did you really realize that there's like a whole community of people that are like you, like building open source, solving problems that they have and sharing it with a bunch of people? Like when did that become a thing? When did you recognize that?
It's likely around the same time because this was around the time I really got interested in, you know, phones and trying to develop for them. So XDA developers, that was like the one-stop shop in the forums for, you know, finding out how to put like different ROMs on like the Android phones and all the ridiculous things we made the Windows phones do that they weren't supposed to do. yeah, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, there's a lot of open source community there. And so like the more I got involved with, you know, looking at their solutions and learning how they were doing things, contributing to that, and ultimately Xamarin. I think that was one of the key catalysts. Once Xamarin became part of Microsoft at that time, and then it became open source.
Yep.
That was huge for me because I had the Windows Phone development experience. And then, you know, it was something that I always wanted to do because I didn't want to deal with Java or Objective-C. I want to just use .NET. I know how to do this. I want to be able to, you know, write something and make it work across these different platforms.
Yeah.
And so GitHub became very, very integral to that because there's samples, there's, you know, this guidance. I think once, like a lot of that, everything open source, as that happened, the more things that became more open source, the more I dug in. Because I could finally see and start to understand all this stuff that, you know, was just kind of obfuscated.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, this is doing something, but I don't know what it's doing.
So here's like a really deep down like question for you. And I'm interested to hear your take. Have you always been, how am I going to phrase this? Have you always been fascinated with like just fixing things? Like always, always, always. And I guess the reason I'm asking is because I'm seeing this trend in this conversation where it's like you're constantly going back to like, I wanted to do this thing. I wanted to do this thing. So I just did it. Like, and I'd love to, you know, get your thoughts as like, you know, you've been doing this for a while now. Like, has there ever been like something that you've come across and you're like, I just can't fix this because of whatever reason?
Oh yeah, there's been a few cases, and a lot of it is an experience, but at the same time, I gain experience throughout that process.
Yeah.
I take all of that, like the more I discover, I learn by trying to dismantle and understand things, because for me to use anything and to do anything, I have to understand it. I don't know if that's, it could be something with my ADHD, but it's for me, like I have to understand it and feel a connection with it because anyone could open an app or open anything and just be a user.
Yeah.
But if something's wrong, I need to understand it enough to be able to accurately portray the problem that I'm facing to help others help me.
Sure. Yeah. So
that's how I address everything. I like to get fascinated by just even knowing a deeper level of what's going on, because there's many things that's just above my head, but just reading the, you know, implementation, I'm like, wow, this is really awesome. I could probably use bits and pieces of this and carry it forward to other things.
Yeah. I mean, I'm of a similar boat in you. Like, I think I've said this on the stream on my show a few times, like the most fascinating thing to me ever, and this is so dumb, it's the pneumatic tubes at the bank. You put the little tube in there and it sucks up like a vacuum. So like whenever we go through like the drive-through banking and I'm with my wife, she just laughs at me because she knows how, like, I'm just so fascinated by it. Like, even though I understand like conceptually how it works, like to me, it's just absolutely insanity. Like, and this technology has been around since the 70s, right? So is there like a piece of technology that you see that no matter how primitive it is, that every time you see it, you just get like, you're like, yeah, that's it. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's like human invention at its finest.
Oh yeah. Never thought about that. Huh?
Like, what impresses you? Like, what sort of, like, you know, no matter what it is, like what sort of like technology or innovation has like legitimately impressed you where you're like, oh, wow, that's pretty freaking cool?
I guess if I were to say anything, it would probably be around synthesizers, especially, yeah, synthesizers and most likely DAWs. So that was like another thing I was interested in high school.
Yeah.
I used to use Fruity Loops before it was FL Studio. I started making a lot of beats and just listening to music. That was one of my stress reliefs. Going back and listen to a lot of like 80s, early 90s, Jamiroquai is like one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
So early 90s Jamiroquai, listening to synthesizers and trying to learn how they make this beautiful sound. Like, I don't understand the music theory, but I'm good with finding and connecting patterns. So I'll hear the stuff in my brain and try to decipher it as much as I can.
Yeah,
that's one thing I always find so amazing, because I'm like, what, synthesizers have been out since maybe 60s?
Yeah, like, the Beatles messed around with synthesizers like in the late 60s, right? Like, so that sort of stuff has been around forever. Did you play MTV Music Generator? Do you remember that game?
Yes.
Oh
yeah, that's actually my cousin lives in Columbus. He used to make these fantastic beats that I couldn't even get close to. And me, my brother, and him would just sit down in their basement and they would freestyle, and I'm just sitting there enjoying it.
The amount of wasted time that I put into that game, like, and look, I mean, like, I've talked about this a lot, so we don't need to drill into it, but like, there's a very large overlap between people that have creative minds, people that like to play music or make beats or sing or draw, and tech. And it's just fascinating to me that like this intersection of tech and creativity in like making beats, making electronic music. Like, I run into people all the time that they just like, I have a good friend who he started like streaming like some of the beats that he's making. And I'm not like huge into electronic music, but like, I told him the other day, I'm like, I've listened to this like hour long video like way too many times. And I don't know if it's just because, maybe similar to you, like the ADHD brain, like it tickles, and like, that's a fun thing. Speaking of ADHD, like, we don't need to talk about this a ton, but like, I'm curious in like how, ADHD is very interesting for people in tech, because I recognize that I think a lot of people in tech are on the ADHD spectrum, for whatever reason. Like, how does your ADHD manifest, and like, what superpowers do you have that leads to like being very good at what you do specifically in tech?
Yeah, so I would say, looking back, I've had it for as long as I could possibly think, but it wasn't until around maybe 2013, early 2014. That's when I noticed that I would be so interested in something. When I was interested in it, I latched on, and it was the adrenaline rush, like the hyper focus, and it would just be just adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
So this programming kind of helped out with that too. Cause like, if I have this idea, I'm like, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
When I discovered ADHD, it's when I would reach a point in time where it was okay, I can't focus. It's the immediate, the analogy of you starting a race. As soon as like the race starts, you move one step forward and there's an invisible brick wall that you just hit immediately over and over and over again. And so I do like I normally do, complain on social media, and I had some friends reach out to me, and like, they were diagnosed and said, go to a doctor. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And after I filled out that, questionnaire and then went through diagnosis, I'm like, oh, this all makes sense now.
Yeah.
But then I realized that a lot of this hyper focus and the roadblocks of anything becoming a roadblock, even if I have a workaround for it, if it's not the way I envisioned it, or however my brain keeps wanting it to go, I will make it work that way, which is how a lot of the contributions I've made with open source, that's essentially how they happen. Like, I just want to remind you and everyone, Power Toys runs on ARM because I was inconvenienced that it didn't work on ARM.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I love the fact that, because how my ADHD manifests is like the losing time. That's kind of how what happens. Like, so like I'll just be so into something and then I'll look at the clock and it's like 4:30 and I'm like, what have I done for like the last 4 hours? Yeah. I'm curious, like, from your perspective, like, you know, what are some of the things that you've, like, obviously medication is a thing. We don't need to talk about medication, but like, what are some of the things that you've found out that are helpful for you when you get into these, like, you know, these situations where ADHD is really taking control over your presence?
Yeah, for me, if I have ground rules for myself, so if I plan on something, like I have to stick to it. So if I have something in my calendar, I have to, you know, adhere to it. And that's what helps me out. Because another thing with, you know, many people with ADHD is organization skills are
What organization skills? Yeah,
exactly. And if I'm given a task, I need it to be clear cut. It's like, this is the expectation. Okay, cool. I can do that. I can keep following that. When things kind of deter from that, so if I have my own plans and things, you know, deter from it, that's I start to lose my mind. So what I do is, to ensure that I don't go completely off the rails, I formulate little backup plans. I have to think ahead of time.
Okay.
For many things, even speaking. I actually like freestyling. This essentially is what we're doing. I like freestyling stuff a lot better, because if there's an expectation, I need to account for, okay, this is where, what happens if this goes wrong? I need backup. So if I have those alternatives in place, in case something goes, you know, interferes, then I have something to kind of bring me back.
Sure. No, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, it's fascinating how you're kind of trying to insulate yourself, because you know that you're going to lose focus or you're going to hyper-focus, right? So like, you put in all these guardrails to, like, when you're starting to slip, you can kind of grab onto a railing, which I think is pretty, a very interesting way of doing it. I think that's, you know, I think it's very clear that you've been able to manage it to some extent very, very effectively. Like, there's people in the chat right now that are saying how awesome you are. So that means something.
Well, I appreciate all y'all. Yeah. I can't see the chat, but I appreciate y'all.
And I'd like to kind of talk, you've mentioned this a few times, like, this fascinating that you have with ARM devices. So what is it specifically? Is it just because, like, you see, like, the value of, like, a non-traditional processor and, like, the performance increases, the enhanced battery life? It's like, you kind of have tethered yourself to that. Like, what is it about ARM? I want to know.
Yep, as with everything, it goes back to Windows Phone.
Sure.
So, I think a lot of it was my fascination that I could, you know, run and compile something from my desktop and run it on a phone. But then also, this goes to Build. So Build 2018, that was when I was really first introduced to Windows on ARM device. It, you know, because I played with the Surface RT and you know, all of those, mm-hmm. but it was just still kind of like, I couldn't do anything there. But these devices, it was running a full version of Windows.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, this is really cool. It was really lightweight. It wasn't an inferno when it was in my bag or whatever, because I have my work laptop, it's all those fans and it just feels like it's taking off and gonna
not effective. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's efficient for sure.
But it's like I can close this thing, open it up immediately, and just roll. So I like that. I like the form factor. I like how, you know, that I can just pick up and work with it. And now especially I can develop on and from it and for it.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, do all of this from one device. So you can't beat that.
Now, did you get big into Raspberry Pis? Like, that was my introduction to like ARM processing. Or was your like first introduction, like, you know, full blown laptops, like they had Windows on them, they were running on ARM devices?
Yeah. So like I've been introduced to Raspberry Pis. I've had, I actually remember working with like a former coworker where we did something with Raspberry Pis and, you know, had the HDMI port and we hooked it up to like a monitor and we had it displaying a web page. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. But I didn't think anything of it and the ARM aspect at that time. But it was actually really around the time that Windows Subsystem for Linux came about, where I actually started really caring about that.
Yeah.
Because the more I did things from, you know, the Windows on ARM side, and the fact that I could, for the things that weren't there, I could actually just pop open this WSL and then run these Linux commands. I'm like, oh, okay, I can run this this app that's not ported over here. I can still run it. And I'm like, oh, wait, what else can I do?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, this is running full Linux, essentially. So I'm like, this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just kind of test the limits of that. And it's funny because I actually, even though I have like, I don't know, I have two Raspberry 4s, and a Raspberry 3, Raspberry Pi 3, I still primarily stick to using WSL on my devices because it's like the perfect, I don't know, I want to say the perfect connection where I can just pop open a terminal and voila, I don't have to do anything extra.
Yeah. I mean, no, I think WSL is like, in my opinion, like one of the most, you know, fascinating concepts that's come out, you know, especially if you're like in the Windows world for a long time, like the idea that like it's not just like an emulated version of Linux, like it's a full blown version of Linux with its own kernel and everything. Like it's pretty crazy to think, especially if you've been a Windows developer or use Windows for a long time. It's like the ability to like, oh, I have Bash like on Windows, like that's wild to me.
This is another Windows Phone thing, because
knowing
that Project Astoria, that was how you could run the Android apps on that subsystem on the Windows Phone. It was like during the Windows Phone Insider builds, but knowing that as WSL was actually coming into Windows 10, I recognized the names of the drivers, like the LXSS. Like I started going, whoa, even though they canceled this on Windows Phone, they're bringing this into Windows altogether. Yeah. So does that mean I can do Linux on top of Windows? What's going on here? So there was like a lot more excitement from there, because what I tend to personally do many times is, if I know there's like a Linux package that, you know, has all of the, you know, has all the headers, has everything there, I'll just compile it right in WSL.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to, you know, compile something that will eventually work to run on Windows natively in ARM, I'll boot from WSL and do it within there. I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's crazy to think that like we live in this world that like you literally open up a terminal, you can CMake something in Linux and then run it in Windows. Like it's pretty crazy to think like that's even possible these days, like all without having to switch machines and all of that. And now like you're kind of like an ARM aficionado, right? Like you mentioned that you're like an ARM ambassador. Like I remember that you went and spoke at like the Snapdragon event, or you were attending of the Snapdragon event. Like you're like a face of this community. Like, and I'm curious is like, you know, when is there ever going to be a day where you only have ARM devices? Like, obviously I'm guessing your work probably doesn't have, like you just have a regular, like, you know, AMD or Intel chip. But like, if you could have it your way, would you only be on ARM devices?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's surprising. And I know a lot of people, you know, many people have their preference, but for me, I've seen the value in having this device that it's packing a punch with performance and still getting that power savings.
Yeah.
It's wild. Like, I think the stuff that's coming out, all like the new devices that are coming out, like you see all the news around them, and then it's really exciting. Just to see, like, for like everyone's in now. It felt like it was you know, just a fad back a few years ago.
Sure.
But now it's just seeing the power savings, and you're still getting all this like ridiculous performance with these new chips. I feel like it's like an ARM revolution. And I want to be at the forefront of it.
Yeah. It's
getting everyone.
I mean, it's got to be at the point now where you get free stuff, right? Like they said, you get devices. No, like you get to test. Like,
it'd be nice about
it. I mean, come here. Like, let's be real. Like, you know, there's people out there that just get stuff sent to them all the time. Like, why are you not one of those people?
Oh, well, for me, sometimes I'll just, as soon as something's released, I'll just, well, this is going on the card. I'll pay this off later. I want it now. that's what typically happens.
Yeah. So
but for me, like, regardless, I'm going to have something rolling with ARM.
I mean, this. I feel like this is an opportunity here. So, like, all the people that are listening to this in the future, like, and if you're building like devices on ARM, get my friend Jeremy, get him an early access to that. Let him play around with it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know very many people that are like more fired up about ARM devices than you are, right? I think it's because, you know, we've talked for like an hour about like, you know, which I think your primary interest, at least from my seat there, you know, this curiosity on how things are made, the immediate realization that, hey, if this thing that I want isn't available, I'm going to do it myself. And then this final step where it's like, there's other people out there that might take advantage of this or might be able to benefit from this and making it available. And that's kind of like, I mean, this is oversimplification of Jeremy as a human being, but that's like you in a nutshell, right? Like, so I think that there's opportunity for you to be more of the process, right? Like, if you're able to dog food some of this stuff, dog food's not the right word, but if you're able to early test some of this stuff, I think that your opinion, your feedback would be super valuable for folks.
Yeah, I mean, and I've actually done this for quite a few developers.
Yep.
Because they know, they see me, you know, Mr. Windows on ARM all over X, Twitter. So I don't mind testing apps for people who don't have the ARM devices. Like, I will gladly help out because they're bringing more to run natively on ARM, because it should be a first class citizen. I can't tell you still how many times I've seen like new apps created that were just only x86 or x64, and you do that drop down, you don't see it.
Yeah.
But this is everyone out there. Like, this is just my PSA. Develop for ARM.
Yeah.
Port it, target it. It's the tooling's right there.
Yep.
There's no excuse now.
Yeah. I'd imagine at some point we're going to get to a day where you can literally take like a binary that's like been compiled for x86 or x64 and just run it through a process and it just converts it to ARM. Like, we're going to probably get to that at some point. We're not there, obviously, at least that I'm not aware, that I'm aware of. But, like, eventually that's going to happen, right? Where you can take, like, an old program that was written, like, 10 years ago and just run it through some system, and then it's compatible on ARM devices.
Well, this is something I actually like about .NET. Because there's, depending on, you know, whether there's been any kind of specific things that are for x64, x86, like put in the code, for the most part, all you really have to do is add in an ARM64 target.
Yep.
And, you know, use a version of .NET or even .NET framework that it'll compile to, and most of the time it'll just work.
Yeah.
Zach, like, that's how I started really having fun with porting old .NET WinForms WPF applications, porting them to .NET 5, .NET 6, and then targeting ARM64, and I'm like, wow, this actually works.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty fascinating. I'd love to kind of, as we're starting to wrap up, I'd love to kind of get, like, what is exciting you at the moment? Like, what are some of the things that you're seeing that are just starting out to be kind of mainstream or aren't mainstream yet in tech? And, like, what are some of the things that you're excited about?
Well, for me as a .NET developer who, you know, does a lot of random things,
sure,
I actually really like .NET Aspire.
Mm.
That one is really interesting to me because there's that aspect of doing building containers.
Yep.
But then having it done in such an easy, like an easier way, yep, than having to deal with all this YAML, which everyone, yep, knows the pain of, yep, having, yep, to do YAML. But just from the .NET developer standpoint, I get so fascinated with how the .NET teams have kind of come together on and looked at the landscape as a whole for, you know, cloud native development, and just seeing like, oh, we can make this easier. We have the tooling, yeah, built into the SDK, and we can just, you know, we see all of these, all the experiments that they've done just kind of come together as little pieces of the runtime. And it's like, okay, we got a framework that's in preview. Here's how to kickstart your development and make it easier,
yeah,
from that standpoint. And I'm really excited to see that move forward because, you know, more ARM stuff, because if there's ARM up in the cloud, guess what? That, mm-hmm, means things are going to cost less because it's going to use less power,
yep,
and I'm still going to get that bang for the buck. So that's one of my, one of the ones I'm really starting to look at now.
Yeah, no, I can't agree more. Like, for folks that aren't aware of what Aspire is, like, it's written in .NET, it's in C#. It's like an opinionated framework for building, like, I guess that the phrase is cloud native apps. So think of like things that apps that run in containers. So it provides like a bunch of great tooling and design patterns to be able to build those sort of apps, right? Like Jeremy mentioned, like running things on containers and not having to like use, you know, Helm charts or YAML or other stuff. So I definitely, if you're interested in learning more about Aspire, like you can just Google or Bing like .NET Aspire and check out all the cool content there. So, you know, we're at the end of the time and you know, this has been a great conversation. It's been great getting to know how you think a bit more. Like we've chatted a bunch at conferences and online and stuff, but it's actually nice to spend an hour of time chatting with you. You know, we've been talking for this time and you brought up a bunch of stuff, and I'd love to get your, you know, your summarization. If you can think of like this hour long conversation we've had, we've talked about a bunch of different topics and what you find interesting. Like, when you think about like the hour we've just spent, but you only had a word or two to think about some of the topics we've covered, what would they be for you?
I will say, well, the first thing that comes to mind is kind of perseverance.
Yeah.
At the core of it, every story I've told has been throughout my development journey has been really persevering through some roadblock, something that wasn't working. I didn't just throw my hands up and say, well, this is what it is.
Yeah.
I changed that. I didn't accept what it is. I found a way to make it work. And I feel like, and just like a story for other developers out there, or even people who are just starting out, don't be discouraged if, you know, if something's just feels like it's unattainable.
Sure. Just
keep at it. There's going to eventually be a way that you'll find your way in there and make it work. That's how I approach things.
I can't agree more. I think that's great. Like, it's also not just in tech, but that's just a great way to go about thinking about things, right? Like, you know, thinking positive, just pushing through things, and, you know, you'll end up getting what you want out of it eventually. This has been great, Jeremy. Like, for folks who aren't following Jeremy on different social medias, like, I highly recommend doing it. You can find him on Twitter, for instance, at Sinclarinator. So S-I-N.
With a zero.
Yeah. Sinclarinator. And there'll also be some links to some other places you can find him on the internet as well. So that's the time, my friend. You know, before we sign off, do you have any parting words?
Yeah, just want to say, you know, to everyone, thank y'all for listening. Like I said, keep at it. Keep your head up. Mental health is important. That's why I got on to the ADHD. So I love the community. So let's just keep at it and make things better in this world.
Awesome. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for everybody tuning in live and listening in the future. This is Isaac Levin from Coffee and Open Source. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Take care.